I'm here today with Dr. Ruth Murray Webster, an experienced management consultant and a graduate of Cranfield's DBA program. Ruth and I share an interest in accomplishing planned organizational change using project management-based methods and approaches. We find ourselves looking at how this can be accomplished beyond the prescriptive or standardized advice now commonly offered by mainstream practitioners and academic literature. From our experience of managing organizational change, what they promote as good practice sometimes fails to take sufficient account of important aspects of human behavior. In this podcast, I'll be asking Ruth to share her insights into this issue, drawing from her doctoral research as well as her professional experience. So, Ruth, what aspects of change management did your research address?
I was interested to find out more about what it takes to change work practices. Many of my clients struggle to realise the benefits that they're seeking from their investments in planned change, despite them following recognised guidance and what you might call prescriptions. I wanted to look beyond those prescriptions and take a closer look at what happens when a temporary team, like a project team or change management team, interacts with the people whose work is the object of intended changes.
So is it correct to say then, Ruth, that you were interested in people rather than process?
No, not quite. I wanted a perspective that viewed a change management situation as it unfolded, and people and process, looking at the dynamics of all of this within context. Not only what people said and did, but also what they thought and felt and intended to do, and how these things changed over time.
Taking, I sense, both a macro and micro perspective.
That's absolutely right.
So how did you do that?
Well, without going into lots of detail, I studied the organisational routines that were undergoing change. These are the repetitive, recognisable patterns of work, of actions carried out by multiple people. I built a conceptual model based on the literature, and I operationalised this to look at the dynamics between the people and the behaviours over time. There were really three key messages arising from this that I'd like to share today.
So why don't we take those in turn?
The first point is really what I learned about the effects of people's embedded thoughts and feelings, beliefs and intentions regarding their actions or their inaction. It probably sounds really obvious. People naturally prefer to do what makes sense to them. It fits their understanding of what's important for the organisation and for them personally. We might tell people to behave in ways that contradict their judgment of what makes sense and try and hold them there, but that's unlikely to build new arrangements that can be sustained into the future. So what I learned is that before you start with any of this, it's really vital to understand the change from the perspective of the people who are intended to change. You know, all the guidance might call those people users or stakeholders or recipients, and you could be seriously missing the point.
Because I guess what you're saying is that they are the point.
That's absolutely right.
But as we know, many project managers and other leaders of change can often believe that they have a toolkit, and they expect this to determine their methods and that it will secure the intended outcome. But of course, compliance with a prescribed process can never be a measure of a task's success.
Yes, that's right. And it's a real shame, because it's not that any of the guidance, any of the prescriptions are wrong, they're just not enough. And because of this, they very commonly and clearly fail to deliver their promise.
So is this really all about the necessity of investing in advance in a more thorough understanding of the perspectives and attitudes of those people that are expected to change? And is this realistic?
It is realistic. It's certainly challenging in a culture that it isn't understood, but it can be done. There's also, though, another less obvious reason why work upfront's needed.
This must be your second point.
That's right. You remember the standard unfreeze, change, refreeze paradigm that's become really popular. It stems from Kurt Levine's groundbreaking work in the 40s.
But isn't that oversimplified and such an outdated idea?
Not really. It has been used in an oversimplified way, but the principle holds. But the key thing I find is that it assumes that what you're trying to change, like the organisational routine in my work, is frozen in the first place. You might think that if it isn't frozen, then, you know, that's happy days. It would be easy to change. But I actually found the contrary position. It's really difficult to change something that different people perceive in different ways. So the key to plant change is to have a frozen or stable routine before you begin to bring about the change. And that can mean doing some work to freeze features of an organisation before you can then unfreeze them.
That does sound very counterintuitive. Almost wasted in the change transition effort.
Yes, it does, but my work showed how it's really necessary. Kolvik, another famous academic, had hinted at this when he was talking about continuous improvement in the 90s, but the link with plan change wasn't really made. And my work wasn't primarily focused on this, but it was a really important finding.
Right, so this work really seems very rich. But you had a third point.
Yes, I do. And this also seems a bit counterintuitive. It's about the merit of closeness between the change team and the people who are changing. And it's a bit complex, so bear with me.
Okay, but haven't you already said that it is really important for the change team to understand deeply the attitudes to change of the people performing the routine?
Yes, I have, but there's a twist in the tale. We know there are times when closeness is necessary and when isolation is necessary. This is not physical closeness or isolation, but behavioural closeness or isolation. We intuitively expect that more radical change, more difficult change, may require particular closeness so that there's real understanding and empathy. But what I found is that this is not the case. People can actually be too close. What we need is change teams to take a stance that shows understanding and empathy, but also maintains enough of a distance to actually devise and persistently communicate unpopular messages.
We've talked about this a lot over the years, haven't we? How a whole repertoire of interpersonal skills and dispositions are needed. I remember us discussing that change agents must find a way to be persistent, tenacious, as well as being empathetic and persuasive.
Yes, it's absolutely spot on. And I think all the things we've talked about over the years, were borne out in my work. So if I could just summarise my three points, we do need a deep understanding of the attitudes to change of the people whose work's intended to change. But we also need frozen current practices to make sense of planned change. The third point is that the change team and the change recipients are all in this together, but the change team needs to be able to engage and to understand, but also to disengage to remain an objective agent of the organisation.
Well, that's lots of food for thought, Ruth. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.